Here today, that we now move on to more uplifting topics. We've dealt with some more morbid issues the last number of nights. So now we deal with a wonderful part of life, which is childhood and youth, and some halachic exemptions. So the Mishnah talks about women and avadim. That's again the Eved Kanani that we discussed in the context of last chapter with the Rav Gamliel and Tevi Avdo. Basically, avadim have the same halachic obligations as women, by and large, even though, again, their status overall is a little bit more complex. Yatzam michal amim l'chal Yisrael no nichnas uktanim. So that grouping is often fine. Now, anytime you talk about a kid, you always have to differentiate between what we call a child who's educable. I don't mean that in the broader societal sense. But from a halachic point of view, what we call a katan shegia l'chinach and a katan shelo higia l'chinach. So in this case, there's a dispute in the Mishnah between Rashi and Tosos, who exactly we're talking about. Rashi says we're actually talking about a katan shegia l'chinach, and Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. He says, and we'll see, there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. So here we go. We'll jump right in. Nashim v'avadim uktanim p'turim, they're exempted from kriyat shema u'minat tefillin. From two mitzvos, kriyat shema, again, that fits into the rubric of a positive commandment that's time-bound, mitzvah seishas man grama, more on that in just a minute, and from tefillin, because in the end, after a very lengthy debate in the Gemara goes back and forth, should we wear tefillin at night, should we not wear tefillin at night, what about Shabbos, what about Yontif, and as everybody knows, we conclude, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif, we don't end up wearing tefillin at night. Tefillin is a daytime mitzvah, as the pasuk says, v'shamarta, we should guard, as achuka azos lemoada, miyamim yamima, that's a reference to tefillin, according to the Gemara, so that ends up being a mitzvah seisei shazman grama. So generally speaking, when it comes to mitzvah seisei shazman grama, women are exempted, they can choose to perform the mitzvah, it's considered a wonderful thing, generally speaking. There are differences between the various mitzvahs of Shazman Grama. For them to perform the mitzvah, the question is, should they make a bracha? So the Ashkenazic tradition is for women to make a bracha. Let's say women take the lulav, they should make the bracha. The Sephardic tradition is that they wouldn't make the bracha because there is a bit of a technical concern. How can they say, Asher kidishan utzav vitzivanu, that we've been commanded, if they haven't been officially commanded to do so? Now the Gemara has a very lengthy discussion, Masechta Brachos, about exempting women from Kriyat Shema. Because the Gemara says, yeah, it's true, it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Grama, but it's not so simple to exempt women on the basis of the idea that Kriyat Shema, as we've discussed it, is about accepting the sovereignty of heaven. That is certainly a mitzvah that applies to women just as much as it applies to men. So probably what the Mishnah means, as the Gemara explicates it, is that women are exempted from the specific reading of these passages, but women are certainly obliged in the mitzvah of Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim. That is a perpetual mitzvah, and as some have referred to it, it's more of an existential state. You realize there's a creator in the world, and that has all kinds of implications. Okay, so that is in terms of Kriyat Shema, and that is in terms of tefillin as well. So now we talk about children and tefillin. So here, you know, Rashi thinks that even though we're dealing with a katan shegia l'chinach, a child who's generally educable, the father would not necessarily have an obligation to purchase them tefillin, even though they're educable towards that end, because the general concept is that children are not capable of properly taking care of their tefillin. So what about Kriyat Shema? So Rashi explains again, during the times of Kriyat Shema, sometimes parents and children are not together. But Rabbeinu Tam says, what is this all about? If you look in the Gemara in Masechta Sukkah and Membez, it says explicitly that a child who is Yodea Lishmor Tefillah, who knows how to take care of his tefillin, there is an obligation to get that child tefillin. Now, our minhag is about a month before Bar Mitzvah. That is an accepted minhag in our community, but the Gemara says much earlier than that. So Rabbeinu Tam just completely disagreed with the way Rashi interpreted this Mishnah. And Kriyat Shema, we know that we start Kriyat Shema at a very young age. The Gemara says that once a child knows how to speak, we should start educating them in terms of Kriyat Shema. So Rabbeinu Tama understood the Mishnah very differently in that way. And he says, of course, once a child is able to be educated towards Kriyat Shema, that's the second thing we teach them right after Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. So again, you could think back to your own kid, 3 years old, 4 years old. We're certainly already teaching them how to say Shema. There's such touching stories, actually. And I don't think that they're apocryphal, but that after the war, when all the children that were hidden in the various convents and the monasteries, etc., they went around. There were a lot of Jewish children there, and again, from the perspective of the people who saved them, we have to be very grateful that they saved them. They weren't exactly looking to give them back, because, you know, from their point of view, they had been saved from a religious point of view, and people went around and called out, Shema Yisrael, and the children would respond. They still knew that, and I've heard from survivors directly. She 2 years ago on Yom HaShoah, I heard from a survivor, Prima Laub, who was 6 years old. She was all alone, literally 6 years old, if you think about that. Amazing. Separated from her parents. She was living underneath somebody's house. She was living in a pigsty. Literally, she hid herself. And she said, she's obviously an elderly woman now, you can imagine, that every single night she would say Shema, and then she would say in Yiddish, she would ask Hashem that she should be able to see her mommy again, and she did. It's kind of an amazing thing. So again, the tradition is to educate children from a very young age towards Shema. So this is a very difficult Rashi. V'chayavin, be that as it may, women, children, they're obligated in tefillah, in mezuzah, birkas hamazon. So Rabbeinu Tam says here, since he believes the first part of the Mishnah is dealing with a katan shelo hagiach, he writes katan out of the second half of the Mishnah. But according to the way Rashi interprets it, since we're dealing with a katan shigia l'chinuch, they're included. We teach children how to daven. Of course, mezuzah as well. There's a beautiful story of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, one of the great Torah scholars of the last generation. So you know that the halach of mezuzah, that it should be in the shlisha elyon, the top third of the door. But if you're in a children's class, you know, like the children want to walk in and they want to kiss the mezuzah, so they can't reach that high unless it's a specially designed door. So somebody wanted to lower the mezuzah, and he was very interested in education and pedagogy in general. He said, no, 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 that's not how you teach a child. You teach a child to reach. You always teach a child to reach up. So children, we always educate them towards mezuzah. So he said, do it the correct way. Children will grow into it. They'll grow. They'll be able to touch the mezuzah, give them something to aspire towards, or lift them up to kiss the mezuzah. But don't lower the mezuzah when it's no longer a correct halachic performance of that mitzvah. Women are obligated in tefillah. Tefillah, according to most of the Rishonim, against the Rambam, is a mitzvah derabanan. And the rabbis established tefillah for rachamim, because we need to ask God for help, for health. We need to ask God for finances. We need to ask God for all of the many, many, many things that we need in our lives, each and every one of us. So women need that just as much as men. And so it was established that tefillah should apply to women as well. Now again, according to the Rambam, holds that tefillah is a Torah-level mitzvah. He was unique in that regard, so he understands that women are obligated, but for a different reason. He says that there is no, on a Torah level, there is no halachic time at which one davens. Rabbinically speaking, we say that one has to daven shachris by the fourth hour of the day, one has to daven mincha by sunset, one has theoretically all night to daven ma'ariv, though we shouldn't really daven past chatzos, because we're scared that people are going to forget to do so, then they're going to fall asleep. And mezuzah, again, by the same logic. You might have thought that since mezuzah is put in the same context of tefillin, that maybe women weren't obligated, but women very much are obligated, because the pasuk in the 11th chapter of Sefer Devarim about mezuzah says, "Uchtav tama mezuzos pesach v'sharecha." Then it says, "Lema'an yirbu yimeichem b'mevenechem." Mezuzah is connected to a long life. What, men need a long life and women don't need a long life? Women need longevity just like men. So women are obligated in mezuzah just the same. Uva birkas hamazon. Now, when it comes to birkas hamazon, this is a little bit of a safek. There's some uncertainty whether women are obligated on the Torah level, whether they're obligated rabbinically. They might say, what's the difference? Men eat and women eat. That's definitely true. Ve'achalta ve'savata ve'rachta. The question is, with the continuation of the pasuk, because the Torah says in Parshas Ekev that you should thank God al ha'aretz ha'tova asher natan lach. Actually, if you read the pasuk very carefully, it really sounds like you only have to bench if you ate from the produce of the land of Israel. It's an amazing thing, but that's the way the pasuk sounds. But we understand it to be from any kind of produce anywhere in the world. Since women were not given direct portions of the land, remember the story of the daughters of Tzlafchad, they inherited their father's portion, that they could do. So there's a little bit of a question there. And also in the text of benching, there's a reference to a number of mitzvahs in which women are not formally obligated, including al brischa shechasam t'viv sarenu, the mitzvah of bris milah. So women don't have the mitzvah of bris milah, just an anatomical issue there. So they say that women are obligated in benching, when benching makes a direct reference to bris milah, so that indeed is a very very serious question. I wasn't planning on getting into this, but since we had an extra minute, I see Siggy is working the WhatsApp, it's magic over there, so adroit. There's a little bit of an interesting history here. The Rambam initially thought that tefillah was a mitzvah saseh shasman grama, that it really was a positive time-bound mitzvah, but that women would be obligated anyway, because again, tefillah rachamein, and then later on in his life, he changed his mind, and he said it was a mitzvah saseh shalo asman grama, that it is not a time-bound mitzvah. So again, the Rambam changed his mind about that, but what remained consistent is his conviction that women were, of course, obligated in the mitzvah of tefillah, obligated in the mitzvah of davening. There is some debate amongst the later authorities, whether that means once a day, twice a day, or three times a day, but it seems pretty clear, at least from the formulation of the Rambam and the Mishneh Torah, that women would be obligated to daven three times a day. And you say, well, how do you figure that? I mean, isn't that already a mitzvah seisha zman grama? But again, it gets back to the fundamental issue. Since this is not a rabbinic institution, according to the Rambam, but the rabbi simply instructed us how to perform the Torah-level mitzvah, since women are already obligated in the Torah-level mitzvah, the rabbis are now telling us this is how we map it out. We map it out into three separate prayers a day, morning, afternoon, and evening. So the rabbis weren't coming to say women aren't obligated. They're coming to say how we should perform this mitzvah. The Gemara assumes that theoretically a person could daven all day long. Really, the Gemara says, Halavai sheis palo adam kol hayom kulo. Theoretically, we don't really encourage this practice, but a person could daven shmonesrei. That's called the tefillas nedava, to volunteer a tefillah. But the Shulchan Aruch writes, since we're a little concerned about doing that because we're afraid people might lose their kavana, so we only like people to do that if they really have to do that, if there's something new to daven over. But in principle, one could really daven all day long. So the way the rabbis set up the mitzvah of davening, they told us how to do it, is basically three times a day. So once they were mapping out an obligation in which women were fundamentally included, so then in principle, women should be obligated in all three tefillos. So again, this can be a little bit challenging because, of course, there are obligations. I can be here because somebody is actually at home taking care of people who might not otherwise be able to be fully responsible for themselves at this stage in their life. So, of course, challenges do come up, but at least in principle, this would be the fundamental obligation. So we'll hold it up here.